Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Daniel Ettinger. How you doing, Bishop?
Well, that's a loaded question, but
we're both messed up. You go. Let the world know.
Right after leaving Taka, I flew home, immediately drove 2.5 hours south. I flew home on a Tuesday to drive 2.5 hours south and have surgery on my face on Wednesday for a nerve pain that I have in the side of my face. And Wednesday we drove home 2.5 hours so that Thursday I could have shoulder surgery. So
wow.
Half my face doesn't move currently, and I'm in a sling for my shoulder.
That's incredible. That's why we're only doing audio.
Nobody wants to see this.
Yeah, some episodes are available on YouTube. You can check that out at YouTube, Keep It Humane, or just search the Animal Control Report in YouTube. Check us out on social media. It's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, the Animal Control Report, and Keep It Humane. We are going to announce the winners of the ACO and Agency of the Year. Really excited about that. So congratulations to everyone who submitted. We actually had pretty good turnout, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for putting that in there. And we're sorry if you didn't win, and hopefully you nominate next year. So we're excited to continue to do that and looking forward to getting those awards in the hands that they belong to. So thank you for that.
I will say that, like, reading through the nominations, it was tough to choose because everybody was very deserving. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, everybody says, oh, everybody should be a winner. No, it genuinely was tough to choose. And I felt all the nominations were great. So,
you know, and it's so true. But when you say everybody, I'll be honest, I'll back you up here. There are a few people that did not play by the rules, and they had to have like a minimum 500 words. And literally somebody submitted a request, a nomination for an officer, and was like, I think they should be the officer of the year. And then when I responded to them, like, hey, can you please add context? Because you need to, you know, to be qualified, you need to have 500. And they were like, sorry, I don't have anything else. And I was like, okay, well, that person's not going to win. People crack me up. Again, part of the Keep It Humane podcast network. Check that out. You can go to keepithumane.com/podcast network. There's a group of us doing some really, I think, great things in the pet animal welfare world. So please like, subscribe, share, rate the podcast, do all those things. If you're listening on Spotify, please click the follow button. That helps us out a lot. So please do that as well. And we got a good one today. Have we ever done a case study like we're about to do? Have we ever really even done a case study?
We did a little bit of a case study, but not this in depth.
No. This one's, we're going to get deep. And this one crosses some lines as far as what we call the link between animal cruelty and domestic violence or human interpersonal violence. So stay tuned for that twist, but you want to hear some of that. I'm also messed up though. So
yeah.
I've been, for those of you that listened to the episode, hit by a dog, like I literally was hit by a dog. And so I'm limping around town with a torn ACL and MCL. However, the surgeon said there were a few strains of the MCL left. So I don't know what that means. He's having me do pre-physical therapy right now. I was like hoping I'd go in and just be like you and get two surgeries back to back, but that didn't happen.
To be fair, my shoulder has been messed up since January.
Okay, yeah, that's a long time.
it's hard related and since January.
It's hard being injured though. So shout out to any of the ACOs or any of our listeners that are on light duty or are injured right now, because life, like I literally wake up every night for like a few hours because my leg hurts so bad.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Sleeping and, I mean, even getting dressed has been difficult on this end. And, oh, don't even try to watch me eat with half my face not moving.
Actually, that sounds like a good video.
Oh, no. Tim equated me, Tim's my husband, he equated me to you know, those lizards that like can blink each eye individually, because one blinks normally and then I have to like slowly focus the other one on blinking. And so like I look like some kind of messed up lizard, according to him.
Bishop Lizard.
Yeah.
That sounds like an actual lizard from the Amazon, or in the Yucatan Peninsula. The Bishop Lizard. Anyway, so we appreciate everybody just, you know, listening, liking the podcast, and then nominating, all those things. We have some good stuff coming for 2024. We're going to try to do a little more of these case studies because they're interesting and fun. I guess you could say it's more like a true crime kind of thing. So would love your feedback on this one. This case is pretty interesting. So we'll start with that video that Bishop and I have watched, and we'll add it here to the show so you can hear some of it. And then I'll just jump into the complaint.
Hey, this is Officer Humphreys with Denver Animal Protection. Who am I speaking with?
Anonymous.
Okay, that's fine. So tell me what sorts of things you're seeing George do to the dog.
Hitting him somewhere down the stairs. Okay. But like grabbing things, throwing at her. Okay.
How did we know that the dog was limping and had something going on with its face?
Because we've seen her limping, and we could see it.
Okay. But you guys didn't witness anything that resulted in that. Like, you didn't directly see George hit the dog or throw the dog down the stairs that made you go, oh no, now the dog's limping.
No, I came back and seen it. The result.
Okay. When was the last time you saw him hit the dog or throw it down the stairs?
A month ago.
When the dog limps, I mean, is it pretty frequently, or does she use the leg at all, or is she just not using that leg?
Does she just like limps, and she sometimes on it. For a while walks on it, and then if it hurts too much, she has it up.
How long has that been going on?
Like about 2 months.
And has anybody taken the dog to a vet?
No.
Okay. What's the dog's name?
Cookie.
And how old do you think Cookie is?
Like 6 months, I think. Out of his pants. Because he was always born kind of there, November, December. Yeah, I think like about 6 months.
Okay. And what kind of dog is Cookie?
A pit bull.
And what color is she?
Black and white. She has like some spray on her.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me, okay? I'm so sorry this has been going on. We're going to go check out the dog right now, okay?
On January 20th, at approximately 9:19 p.m., Denver Animal Protection Officer Villanova and Humphreys responded to a call to investigate an allegation of animal abuse at 977 Clayway in Denver, Colorado. Prior to arrival, they spoke with the reporting party, who reported to the Denver police officers that her sister's boyfriend had been abusing a six-month-old puppy, pit bull type dog named Cookie. They identified the abuser as none other than Mr. George McGee. She stated that when she witnessed the dog, she observed the dog was limping and had possible lacerations on her face. She stated that Mr. McGee had thrown the dog down a flight of stairs. The witness got on the phone with Officer Humphreys, but refused to identify themselves. They stated that they had witnessed Mr. McGee hit the dog with both fists and an object that has been seen the dog limping for approximately 1 to 2 months. They identified the dog as Cookie, a six-month-old black and white pit bull type dog. The witness stated they also witnessed Mr. McGee hit the dog with a belt and shoe. Officer Humphreys and Villanova arrived at the address along with Denver police officers. They made contact with Mr. McGee, who was uncooperative at first. He brought the dog to the door, which you'll see in the video, or hear in the video, I should say.
Does she have a leash?
Why does she need a leash? She's not coming outside.
Okay, what?
You need to see her. There she is.
Okay.
What happened? Why is she limping?
She jumped out of my arms a couple weeks ago.
When they get, like, allegations like that, that the dog's injured or something.
Okay.
So, you know,
if it's unwarranted, we return the dog to you. Okay?
If what's unwarranted?
If
we don't find any allegation, or if we can't find any reason to believe she's been abused, then we return the dog to you.
Okay, so her leg's injured, and I already told you that, and her leg's been injured.
So, George, there's ways of telling if it's a natural caused injury, like jumping, compared to an abused injury. That's all they're looking for, is to make sure it's natural, make sure that the dog's cared for.
They're obligated to come and investigate.
Yep.
And take the dog.
So you came here and you said
an allegation of abuse.
Now, what was the allegation?
That somebody here is hitting the dog.
I'm saying, and abusing the dog. What is wrong with the dog? What did
the dog is limping.
What did they say?
They said the dog was limping. The dog's been like that for 2 months.
It ain't been no 2 months.
Okay. Well, you just said it's been several weeks, right?
I did say that. Several weeks is not 2 months, though, is it?
That's fine. Sure, we still have a problem, okay? So
I'm just saying, you're saying one thing, you're trying to make me seem like I'm an asshole.
I'm not at all. Not at all.
You said it's been 2 months. I said it's been a couple weeks.
Okay.
A couple weeks is not 2 months.
They haven't accused you of anything. They just want to make sure that the dog's fine. Okay.
They said I'm hitting the dog.
They said somebody here has hit the dog, not you.
Correct. I did not say you. I said somebody is hitting the dog here.
Best case, you know, like, you get your dog back.
Give her some pain meds tonight. We're going to get her to a vet.
She don't need no pain meds.
Sir, she's limping. She needs pain meds.
Are
she needs.
Serious?
Yes, I'm serious. If you're limping for weeks,
they don't
you
give me
don't
fucking
think...
pain meds.
If you...
Are you serious?
Yes.
I'm going to go get a number out of it.
Okay.
I'll be right.
So I need some more information on how you guys are still going to take my dog.
We have a legal
for
authority.
For allegations, no proof, no nothing, just for allegations. The dog is limping, and I told you my dog is limping.
George, that's why they take the dog, to see if there's
proof. So how come?
If there's no proof.
I can't take my own dog.
Well, you had that opportunity, you haven't done it, and you said
because
that you
I
can't
afford it. And I
and
can't afford
fine.
It now, so why
that's
are you trying to make me afford it?
Because, sir, for you to have a dog with an injury and not seek vet care is a crime.
What crime is that?
It's neglect of animals. To not seek veterinary care is considered animal neglect. Do you want me to read you the ordinance? I'll read it to you.
You read it to yourself. I don't care.
Okay. So the dog's got to come with me tonight. We need your ID.
You need my ID?
And as the dog walked to the door, it had a significant limp on its right front leg. Mr. McGee stated that the injury happened when he was carrying the dog down the stairs. While also carrying something else in his hand, he leaned over and believes that that's when the dog jumped out of his arms. At that point, the dog toppled over and fell down the stairs. Officers asked McGee when the injury occurred, and he said before Christmas. Okay, so remember, this is January 20th now. When asked if he got vet care for the dog, he said he couldn't afford it. Denver Animal Protection officers advised Mr. McGee that they would be impounding Cookie and taking her to the Denver Animal Shelter and holding her on what's called a cost of care while they complete their investigation. Mr. McGee was reluctant, but did allow them to impound the dog. They brought Cookie to the Denver Animal Shelter and took photos and videos of her injuries along with the leg injury. Cookie also had a missing fur on her back and skin around her mouth was red and irritated. She also had flaking skin on her head and most areas of her face. On the 21st of January, Dr. Louisa Poon, who was the chief veterinary, the chief veterinarian for the Denver Animal Protection, noted that Cookie had Demodex mange, a fractured elbow, which has also resulted in the hyperextension of her wrist. The fracture is an old injury, likely occurred 2 to 4 weeks ago, and has since gone without treatment. Dr. Poon stated treatment for the Demodex mange, I suck at reading. Dr. Poon started treatment. We don't even need that. That's stupid. All right. Hang on. Okay. On January 21st, Officer Villanova spoke with the reporting party again. They did not want to make a statement on the record. they did state that the dog's missing fur on the back was from, they thought it was from Mr. McGee hitting the dog. They explained that that was not, the officers explained that was not the case, but it was mange. On the 22nd, Officer Humphreys spoke to Mr. McGee over the phone and advised him that Dr. Poon recommended the dog get orthopedic surgery. He gave consent for DAP to pursue the treatment. Officer Humphreys did offer Mr. McGee the option to surrender the dog, but he refused. She explained that if he was found guilty, the shelter will likely request the restitution for the cost of treatment and boarding and care. On January 23rd, Officer Villanova and Humphreys went back to 977 Clay Way, which was the home of Mr. McGee, to discuss the charges. They explained, based on their findings, they cited him with neglect. So that's not necessarily animal cruelty. It's animal neglect, and that is to allow an animal to go without veterinary care. And so he was charged on January 23rd, 2020, for neglect of animals. And then his court date, his arraignment date, was on March 23rd, 2020. And so we'll get into a little bit more of that here in a second. Let me just, before, hang on one sec, we'll just pause because I'm going to have to edit that. No, it's about the same. Okay, cool. Go ahead.
Can you explain what the cost of, was it cost of care? Is that what you called it? Because yeah, that's not a warrant.
Yep. Yep. I'll do that. So when they impounded the dog, and as it's written in the statement, the Denver Animal Protection officers refer to issuing what's called a cost of care. So Denver had in their, or still do, in their municipal code, have what's called a cost of care, or there's actually a different name for it. Basically what it is any investigation for animal cruelty or neglect, if you impound, you issue this cost of care, which is basically a bonding document that shows that you've impounded the animal. You basically, as the dog, pet owner, or keeper, you have 10 days to appeal the impoundment, or you have to pay 30 days of care, and that care is based on the impound fee and the daily boarding fee and then any medical fee that is accrued during that time. If you fail to appeal the impoundment in that 10-day period, or you fail to pay that cost, which could be $300, it could be $600 for the first month. It's usually for one animal. I think it was like $120 for the impound and then $10 a day. So it's like $495. It was something like that for like 1 month. So you have to pay that $300-$400 for that 1 month within that 10-day period. Again, if you fail to do so, then the animal becomes the property of the county at that point. So,
okay.
And I don't believe I was going to see if there was further notes. I don't know if he paid. Let me just see if I can find that. I don't think he did. So the dog became the property of the county, but it gets better. So we'll look at his case before we move on, the outcome of that case. Actually, before we even do that, you have the vet report written by Dr. Poon, their statement. And so I'd love for you to read that.
All right. So I'm going to read it as is because this is coming right from the vet. Dog of animal identification number A348528, named Cookie, was brought into the Denver Animal Shelter by Animal Protection Officers Humphreys and Villanova in the evening of January 20th. Sorry, an ad started.
You sound like me.
In the evening of January 20th, 2020, Cookie was an approximately 6-month-old intact female American Pit Bull Terrier dog. A full physical exam was performed on January 21st, 2020. Cookie was bright, alert, and responsive. There was a mild lameness noted in the right thoracic limb and on palpation, pain was elicited on the right elbow. There was also crepitus or a crackling or grating sound caused by bones rubbing against each other and joint thickening on the right elbow. Furthermore, there was hair loss on the right side of her body as well as around her face. Due to the lameness and pain noted in the right thoracic limb, Cookie was sedated and x-rays were performed. As hair loss was seen on physical exam, a deep skin scraping and skin cytology were performed. Cookie was diagnosed with a broken humerus right at the elbow joint. The type of fracture is known as Salter-Harris type 4 of the lateral humerus condyle. On x-rays, there was evidence of bony remodeling, suggesting that fractures happened between 2 to 4 weeks ago. The skin diagnostics revealed Cookie had Demodex mange, which is a type of mange not contagious to other animals. Demodex mange is commonly seen in young dogs and usually is due to being immunocompromised. Cookie was administered an oral medication for treatment of Demodex mange, and she was started on pain medication for her broken humerus. Arrangements were made with the DAPS veterinary partner, Service Hills Veterinary Hospital, to have the fracture surgically stabilized. The surgery was scheduled to be performed on January 27, 2020. After surgical stabilization of the broken humerus, Cookie would require 6 to 8 weeks of recovery and rehabilitation. February 4th, 2020, addendum. Cookie was sent to Seven Hills Veterinary Hospital for surgical consult on January 29th, 2020. Per Dr. Matt Demi of Seven Hills Veterinary Hospital, the fracture in the right forelimb was clinically healed and almost radiographically healed. If surgery was performed, he would have to refracture it to try to get better alignment, which would be very difficult to achieve. The fracture is currently healed but poorly aligned, and on x-rays, there's already evidence of arthritis. Mm. Due to the lack of medical care initially at the time of the fracture, which led to the fracture not properly aligned when healed, the dog will now have arthritis in the right elbow joint for the rest of her life. As she becomes older, the arthritis will worsen, leading to more pain and discomfort. And that's Dr. Poon's evaluation.
So I really just quickly want to read section 8132 from the Denver Revised Municipal Code, that is neglect of animals prohibited. It shall be unlawful for any owner or keeper of any animal to fail to provide such animal with food, potable water, adequate shelter sufficient for the animal or immediate veterinary care if the owner or keeper of any animal knew or should have known that the animal was distressed, seriously ill, or injured. So that is the neglect code. Now, section 8131, cruelty to animals, states, it shall be unlawful for any person to beat, inflict violence upon, or kill, or overdrive, overload, drive when overloaded, overwork, torture, or mutilate, or otherwise treat in a cruel, dangerous, or inhumane manner, or any animal, or to cause such acts to be done. So the argument or the conversation here is the allegations were that he was cruel to this dog per mm-hmm. the anonymous reporting parties.
But yet they're anonymous.
Yeah. So how do you prove that? Yeah. Thankfully, you have that neglect code that covered it, right?
Because thank God, because I don't think I'd have a code. I don't have a statute that would have covered that. My mistreatment code is no animal shall be treated in a cruel manner, period. Done.
So it's tough, right? Because, and you're right, no animal shall be. And you could try to articulate that as allowing it to go without care is a cruel manner, right?
Right.
That's what, so that, try. I would have, I don't know if I would, I would have at least, man, I can't even say that. That's not fair. I don't know if I would have done that. It may have been worth having a conversation with the city attorney at that point. Can we also charge cruelty for what I just mentioned, allowing it to go in a, basically, what did it say? It says, or otherwise treat in a cruel, dangerous, or inhumane manner. I don't know if you could, it's, How do you?
I would say inhumane fits because you're inhumanely keeping this dog in pain. You are not providing it with any pain medication.
Yeah.
And if you can get the veterinarians to articulate how painful that injury was for her to be continually limping on.
Yeah. And now she has arthritis too, so.
Let's look at your knee. I mean, like, legitimately, you were given pain meds, weren't you?
No. Mm-mm. Nope.
They didn't give you any?
Everybody I tell is like, what? You didn't get pain meds? So here's the thing. They're like,
Did you choose not to take them?
No, they legitimately. So I hate to get this deep, but I will, because why not? This is whatever. I have another situation where I'm not really supposed to take ibuprofen. I don't take it. So basically what I was told is take Tylenol, and like Tylenol works for like 10 minutes or a headache. I don't know it. So I've been in like suffering. I don't want the world to feel bad for me. But if you want to cash at me something, no, I'm kidding. The reality is, no, I was not given an option for payments. Just Tylenol.
Okay. But you were given the option for Tylenol.
Correct.
Whether that actually works for you or not.
Correct.
The point is you were given the option for a medication that was supposed to help with pain.
Correct.
This dog, who cannot fight for herself, who cannot articulate her pain other than limping and probably licking at it and then trying to itch herself because she's got
the mange. Yeah, yeah.
She is in pain constantly.
Very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable. And so I would articulate that as being inhumane for not getting medical treatment.
Agreed.
Whether my DA's office would accept that, that's how I would articulate
it. And then would the defense argue that it's double jeopardy because you charged them for the same thing with two different charges? So I think it was in their best interest to charge the way they did versus maybe overdoing it. So
how did they actually charge it?
Under the neglect code, under animal neglect. Yeah. And I wish I had an update. I should have probably done some more research on that. I know she was adopted. I just don't know if we transferred her out to a rescue group or if we adopted directly. I can't tell you that, but I know she was adopted.
Did she keep both legs?
That I can't recall.
Or did she keep the leg?
The front leg.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't recall if they made her a tripod or not. So I can find out. Okay. Let's go through this case here. Okay.
Yes.
So basically he was charged with animal neglect. So on January 23rd, he was charged with the animal neglect code, the 8131. And surprisingly enough, I don't know how he got into a hearing so quick, but on February 3rd, 2020, he pled not guilty. On the 28th of February, they did a reset date. He was then arraigned on March 23rd of 2020. Then on April 27th, he had his court trial, which was continued by the court. Shout out to Judge Barry Schwartz. He signed a few warrants for me. Nice guy. Really nice guy. Okay, I digress. On these dates become really important, and you'll see why here in a second. On June 12th, they reset again. Then on July 10th of 2020, they did the court trial. Now, can you tell the listeners what's the difference between a court and jury trial?
There's not a jury of your peers, right?
Right. It's just judged by the judge.
Yeah.
No pun intended, or pun intended in that case. So basically, the court trial got extended all the way up to September 28th, 2020. And then he finally had a guilty plea on November 16th. Again, these dates come in handy. So his sentence, I'll read that to you. He basically got 2 days time served in jail and paid $50 to the court. And that was it. Okay.
Jeez. Yep.
We on the same page there?
Yep.
All right. Are you ready for the?
I'm ready.
So now we're going to transition. We're going to transition here to another case that involves Mr. McGee. Okay. So I'm going to read that for you. So this is from May 7th, okay? May 7th of 2020, May 7th of 2020. Prosecutors charge a 50-year-old Denver man Thursday for allegedly shooting two people on Sunday, leaving one of them dead. George McGee, 50 years old, faces two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of attempted first-degree murder, four counts of possession of a weapon by a previous offender, and two counts of first-degree assault, according to the Denver District Attorney's Office. According to the probable cause statement for his arrest, a family was outside playing football at their home on the 900 block of Clay Way on Sunday evening when Mr. McGee, who lived next door, got into an argument with several people outside. At one point, McGee punched someone, and another person punched him in the face, according to the statement. Shortly after that, witnesses said shots were fired from McGee's vicinity, and a witness saw him with a handgun in his hand. He went inside his home afterwards, witnesses told police. Two of the victims were taken to Denver Health Medical Center, where one of them, 41-year-old Billy Williams, died, rest in peace. A woman who was also hospitalized, originally in critical condition, survived her injuries, according to the DA's office. And so that's the second part of this case where that link, right? That link between human violence and mm-hmm. animal violence is connected. So he's still under trial at that point for the neglect case. And he goes around and allegedly shoots two people. And then you have an update on that case as well.
Yes. title from the Nine News. Partial mistrial declared for a man charged in killing of neighbor. A Denver jury found a man guilty on several charges, but couldn't come to a consensus on the most serious counts related to the fatal shooting in May 2020. George McGee was arrested and initially charged with the following related to the fatal shooting of his neighbor in the 900 block of Clay Street, May 3rd, 2020. Two counts first-degree murder, two counts attempted first-degree murder, four counts possession of weapon by a previous offender, two counts of first-degree assault. Billy Williams, 41, was shot and killed that night, and 35-year-old woman was wounded in the shooting, according to Denver police. Officers responded to the scene on Clay Street just before 8 p.m. for an incident of a shooting and found two people suffering from gunshot wounds, according to the probable cause statement for McGee's arrest from DPD. Williams was shot at least two times and was taken to the hospital where he died several hours later. His son told police a bunch of his family was outside playing football in the front of their house when McGee came outside and began arguing with his sister, according to the PC statement. He said another person also began arguing with McGee, and he saw McGee punch that person, whose name was redacted in the PC statement. Right after that, he said his dad came out of the house and punched McGee and said that he immediately heard gunfire. Both his dad and the woman were shot. Witnesses told McGee that went back inside the home on Clay Street after shooting, but he was not there. Eventually, police located McGee shortly before midnight in a nearby warehouse area holding under a ramp at Blue Star Recyclers. McGee's trial wrapped up on Tuesday when the jury returned a partial verdict, according to the spokeswoman for the Denver DA's office. He was found guilty on four charges and not guilty on a fifth charge. Jurors, however, could not come to an agreement on two counts of first-degree murder that McGee faced, and a mistrial was declared on those counts. A status hearing is now set for July 18th. According to the Denver DA's office, it's possible a new trial could be set to try McGee for murder charges, but no decision has been made.
So I have an update, too, on that, just really quick. The difference between what's like murder versus like murder is like the intent to kill, right? Versus manslaughter, which is like someone dies from an action without the intent to kill.
You're driving your car and get into an accident and somebody accidentally dies.
Yeah. I mean, if you come outside with a handgun after getting into a fight and shoot people, I think that's murder. I'm just saying.
You're not even after, and he was already out there with the handgun when he started the fight.
So he was sentenced on May 26th of this year. He received life with parole, and his next parole hearing is May of 2060.
Damn.
So, you know, and go ahead.
I was going to say, he clearly has an anger issue.
Well, he, like...
If he can prove that the anonymous witnesses to the puppy...
Yeah. I think that that's the thing, right? Is we know, like, for us doing this job for a long time, and we could actually probably bring on one of the forensic vets that we've had on in the past and talk to them about the injuries or have them review the injuries and say, like, are the injuries consistent with it, just a fall, or would there have to have been some sort of inertia or force behind the dog hitting the ground, like, versus like a falling from 4 feet or being forced down from 4 feet, if that makes sense. And so I think we could argue that, that dog was probably most likely cruelly treated, if not intentionally cruelly beat. And then he goes on just months later, while he's still in trial for neglect of animals, he then murders someone and shoots another person, right?
Yeah. Two people.
Right. So it's like, it shows that pattern, which we refer to all the time on the show and which you hear so much in our profession, is the link between animal cruelty and domestic violence, right? And so, or interpersonal violence, however you want to define it, right? And I think that's something that we try to teach others. Now, because the case was so new at the time, as far as the animal neglect case, and because it came in as neglect, a judge may not have decided, even if it, let's just say it was tried before any of this stuff went down, and the sentencing, you know, before the murder stuff went down, and the sentencing was ruled, because it was a neglect case and not a cruelty case, the judge may not have ordered anger management, which you see a lot of in cruelty cases, right? But the judge may not have ordered anger management.
Which, I mean... it happened so quick, I don't even think that anger management would have had a chance to work on him.
Seriously. And it's so sad, too, because these patterns are there, but we're missing them. And this one happened so quickly, but some of these patterns, right, it starts at an early age, and then over time, it progresses, right? We see this, unfortunately, with these mass shootings. A lot of these people have... ties to history of animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. Serial killers have history of animal cruelty. And that's actually one of the strongest links known. There used to be, I talk about it in one of the classes that I do, the McDonald Triad. Have you ever heard of that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yep. So for those of you listening that may not know what the McDonald Triad is, it was basically something they came up with that was a predictor for serial killers. And what that looks like is
not necessarily a predictor.
Okay. Well, they debunked it. They did debunk it, but go ahead.
But many, many serial killers did have all three components.
Which they ended up, we'll get to those components in a second. They ended up saying that animal cruelty was the strongest link as a predictor. The other two, the other two were bedwetting and then arson. And so as we move through that, you know, we know now that, animal cruelty is that strongest predictor, unfortunately. And I just, you know, I really hope that part of this, part of the podcast and part of what, you know, we do in general is to educate not only our fellow animal control officers or the community, but also our partners in law enforcement. Like, this should be an eye opener for them to see the connection between animal and human violence. I have another case. I was actually researching the case because it happened right before I left Denver, but the case is still open, and so I couldn't talk about it. And unfortunately, the case, it's a really interesting case, and I'll tease it for a little bit later. It involves two different scenarios. The second time I met with this individual. They actually had a failure to appear warrant. However, they were not taken into custody just due to how Denver was very, like, I guess I'll say liberal in that aspect of like, it's just a dog warrant. They can go figure it out at some other time. Right. And so they the second interaction with that person, they were doing something illegal, allegedly, and they could have been arrested for that warrant and they weren't. And unfortunately it involved the child. It's a really interesting case. And once it's closed, we'll get back to that. And this is something we want to do a little more of here on the show. Just kind of covering some of these cases. Cause you know, it's just interesting. We can learn from them, in that aspect. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I've got a couple too that are definitely worth talking about that I learned a lot on that I think would be beneficial for other people. And
yeah,
so I'm excited to go down that avenue.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, you know, justice served in some aspects. This dude will never, you know, he'll never be out of prison. I mean, he's in prison. Let's see, he's 54. How many years is his parole? His parole hearing is 2060. So this is 2023. Is that 37 years or 27 years?
37.
So 37. So 30. So he'll be 80. He's never, the dude's never getting out of jail. Like, no. He'll never see a dog again, other than a dog coming in to sweep the jail to make sure there's no narcotics or cell phones. Like, that, he made his decision at 50 years old. He made his decision that he was going to, you know, choose that life, unfortunately. And,
well, and
life long before that, but it just caught up with him.
I almost wonder what his previous history is, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what his previous criminal history might look like.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also the likelihood that this isn't the first time, he just wasn't caught before.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And that, you see that, right? And so that's the whole point of the animal cruelty aspect, is that should get us looking more. And we tried, as an industry, we tried to do this NIBRS thing, the National Incident Recording Database,
started
through the FBI. And I talk about that, but the unfortunate part of that is a lot of animal control agencies just don't have the ability or access to report that. And so it's a moot point, unfortunately. Well,
it has to be reported by a sworn officer.
Correct.
NIBRS will accept it if it's reported by a sworn officer, but it has to be reported by somebody sworn. And I've talked to the FBI directly about that.
I swear a lot. However, I was sworn in Colorado, but I wasn't post-certified. I was sworn for the last agency that I was with. Unfortunately, like I said, I swore a lot. I wasn't sworn, but we weren't post-certified, so it still would have to go through the a post-certified officer. So, unfortunately.
Well, and you know, the one thing that you can do within your agency is work on the relationship. If you're not with the PD directly, or even if you are, you can create your own list. It doesn't have to be, I mean, obviously if it's nationwide, that's better, but if it isn't and you can only do local, you're doing something rather than nothing. My department actually has come to me and said, hey, if you find that you've got any kids that are involved with animal cruelty, I want their reports. I'm going to put them on the list, because then they become watched. Mm-hmm. For, you know, school shootings and things like that. And I've sent the reports over to the lieutenant that asked me for that, and he has created this list. So it's something that can be done locally.
And it should be. And I appreciate you saying that, because the reality is it's better to do something than nothing, right? Yep. And so what? You don't have access to the national database for that. But if we continue to try, right, our own, you know, internal ways, we can make an impact. And so, you know, it's really finding
a workaround.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, unfortunately, it was a fun episode, because we haven't done something like this before, where we really reviewed a case and got into the weeds about it. So I'm really glad we were able to kind of take that on, and If you have cases that you want to send to us for us to review, you can shoot me an email, daniel@keepithumane.com. You can go to our website, keepithumane.com, and contact us that way as well. We're happy to get you on and review cases. And so it's just something different that we're going to try to do a little more of here in 2024. So thanks again for kind of staying with us as we're going on literally our fifth year, yo.
Damn.
Can you believe that?
We got the momentum.
Well, stay with us.
And only like, because of our listeners.
Like, share, rate the podcast. We're extremely grateful for our listeners to make this happen, because obviously if you're not listening, we're not producing. So we appreciate you staying with us, and hopefully you continue to listen. Tell a friend to tell a friend. We really, you know, we want to continue to grow for you and be the voice out there in the community, because we know you do all that hard work and we want to make sure you're recognized for it. Also, big announcement coming January 1st, so you won't want to miss that. Big announcement for the podcast. Huge. It's so big, yo. I can't wait. Anyway, anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Well, thank you for listening. And as always, keep it humane.